This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The first presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is a little more than 3 weeks away. Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson's trying to join them in what should be an interesting and unusual debate. Trump meets with Mexico's president. Lots to talk about today with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, good afternoon. Glad to have both of you here today.
Good to be back.
Ken, before we get the discussion started, what's the trivia question for today?
Well, I don't know if you know this, but Donald Trump gave a speech yesterday about immigration.
Yeah, I heard something about that.
Oh, yeah, it was in all the papers. Earlier in the day, he was in Mexico meeting with the Mexican president. So my trivia question is, who was the last U.S. presidential candidate born in Mexico?
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you think you know the answer, give us a call, 513-419-7100. The first correct caller will win a political junkie button. Again, the question, who was the last U.S. presidential candidate to be born in Mexico? 513-419-7100. So, Ken, Donald Trump goes to Mexico. I mean, I was thinking, who would have seen that coming?
Well, you know something? Yesterday was almost a surreal day. When I think of him on the podium with the president of Mexico, and basically, you know, I think Donald Trump looked presidential. He looked like he was up there. He looked like he was a world leader, and he was measured. He didn't embarrass himself or embarrass the country. From all accounts I've read, there were no gaffes or breaches of protocol. It was just, you know, a decent showing, and a kind of like showing that I can do this. You know, I can be the president of the United States, not just on a reality show. And then he comes home and goes to Phoenix and has this rally where all the talk about softening a position on immigration. Yeah. Boy, there was no evidence of that last night.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was supposed to be about changing the tone of his rhetoric about immigration and immigration reform, not abandoning his, you know, core beliefs on that, but at least, you know, softening his position a little bit. But boy, he didn't do that.
So how are you gonna? But you know something? I mean, how can if his rise to the nomination?
How can he get out of it? How can he
exactly?
He can't
exactly.
get out of it.
If his rise to the nomination was predicated on the fact that he had these strong views about illegal immigrants and deportations and a wall of Mexico, how do you soften it 70 right. days or less before the election without upsetting his core supporters? So any thought about softening or trying to reach out to a broader electorate that went by the wayside last night?
How does he tell these millions of people? Well, we thought we were going to get a wall out of this. Yeah. And, you know, he couldn't. He's in a box, and he cannot get out of that.
I don't think he thinks he's in a box. I think this is what he wants to do. Yeah. I think maybe some of his advisors, maybe
his advisors are telling him differently, I think.
Right. Well, yeah, no, I think advisors are talking to each other differently. The difference between Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon of Breitbart are really like night and day.
Right.
So you think, Ken, if he'd have cut it short and said, the Mexico visit's it, I'm not doing anything else today, that would have played out better?
No, I'm not saying it didn't play out better. I'm just saying we just saw two completely drastic different Donald Trumps yesterday. The diplomat, the world statesman, and the red meat guy who wants to talk about deportations.
So That's where the whole thing gets confusing. I mean, which is the real Donald Trump? I mean, he shifts so much, at least it seems that way to me, that it's hard to keep up with the guy when it comes to his policies on immigration.
I thought Phoenix was Donald Trump. I thought that's the real Donald Trump. I think he may have bitten his lip and said, look, I can play with the big boys when he was, you know, in Mexico along with the president. But I think getting home, I mean, I just watched that speech. That was vintage Trump. I understand the speech was written by Steve Bannon of Breitbart News. Yeah. The thought that he would have somebody from Breitbart running his campaign, the CEO of his campaign, I mean, that's, forget about the outreach to the Paul Ryans, the Mitch McConnell. McConnells, the John McCains, the Republicans who were trying to save the Congress, save the House and the Senate. This was vintage Breitbart, Bannon, Trump, and then this is basically the Donald Trump we've seen all year long.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've heard that kind of rhetoric for a year. The fact that Bannon is there now just reinforces it. I mean, you know, he talks to Trump, and Trump will listen to him because he's inclined to listen to him and inclined to do what Bannon says.
So when James Carville, you remember back in the early 90s, you know, and he's helping Bill Clinton with campaign strategy, and Carville comes up with that great phrase, "It's the economy, stupid." And this, of all things, seems to me like a strong point for Trump, the economy. So I'm wondering, making immigration such a huge issue, putting that at the forefront of your campaign, I just wonder if he's making a mistake, if he shouldn't be focusing more on economic issues.
Well, you know something, I mean, I've listened to a lot of Donald Trump's speeches over the last couple of weeks, and he has made jobs a key issue. It wasn't last night, because obviously everybody was talking about this will be the immigration speech that he needs to give, because there was a lot of talk about, are you softening, are you this, are you backing away? But, I mean, he's talked a lot about, you know, jobs being shipped overseas, yeah, and Obama's handling the economy, and he'll bring jobs back to this country. I don't think he's lacking for talking about how what he wants to do. I mean, how he'll do it is another thing completely, and I don't think we ever got specifics on that, but he certainly talks about the economy and the lost jobs, and I think a lot of his appeal, especially with white working class folks and the Pennsylvanias, the Ohios, yeah, the Michigans of the world, is based on the fact that jobs are being shipped overseas.
He talks, you know, about the international trade agreements, and, you know, he is four square against them, and that plays very well. I mean, very well. In places like eastern Ohio and the Mahoning Valley, where, you know, steel jobs have basically disappeared, and they see China dumping cheap steel into this country. I mean, it's a very, very effective argument in some places.
And this is such an anathema to what Republicans have been saying for years, that we need free trade, we need global competition, we need it to spread our capitalism or whatever. And this is Donald Trump. What Donald Trump is saying about these trade deals is so, something you never hear from a Republican presidential nominee.
Republicans, too, like Rob Portman, who had always supported
the trader, the former trade rep.
The former trade rep, who said, you know, he was kind of the father of CAFTA.
You know, one thing he did, though, that he did manage to dominate this particular news cycle with this whole trip. And for a guy who is, his advertising is pretty much non-existent, it's a necessity for him. I think it's something he's managed to do quite well.
Isn't it something, though? I mean, for example, we have not had a Hillary Clinton press conference since December 5th.
Yeah.
I mean, before Iowa, before New Hampshire, all year long, no Hillary Clinton press conference. A lot of times she'll go out of her way not to make news, although her speech at the American Legion yesterday, the day before, talked about, really, about the dangers and the risks of Donald Trump. But for the most part, she seems almost very glad to not have to make news and cede the stage to Donald Trump. I just wonder if that's a mistake in the long run.
Yeah, and I've read several people who say that could be her strategy, just to lay low. You've got all these things going on around you, the emails, the Clinton Foundation. Try to outlast those particular controversies and then just sit back and hope that Trump will shoot himself in the foot along the line with some comment or tweet that he makes.
I think she's trying to lay low at least until the debates start. You know, because I think that's where she thinks, you know, she can really knock him out.
Oh, you think so? I don't know. I mean, let's forget about facts and stuff we make up. But but I think that the debates that start on September 26th, oh, my goodness. I mean, it's one of those car crashes you just cannot take your eyes off.
Oh, yeah.
Even if she has facts on her side and logic on her side, he has they both have emotion on their side. But we know that Donald Trump will say anything.
Yes.
I mean, just about, you know, the Muslims celebrating in New Jersey after 9/11, the fact that Ted Cruz's father worked with Lee Harvey Oswald. He'll say anything, and his supporters will love it. And my goodness, you could have all the fact checkers in the world dismissing what he says, but ultimately, so what? So, you know, who are you going to believe, as Groucho Marx once said, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes?
Yeah.
Again, the trivia question, Ken, if you could give that to us again, and we'll see. We've got some callers lined up to try their hand at this. What was that question again?
Well, regarding all the news from yesterday, who was the last presidential candidate, U.S. presidential candidate, born in Mexico?
Okay. Let's see if Trish in Butler County knows the answer to this. Trish?
Yes.
Who do you think it was?
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney is the incorrect answer. I believe Mitt Romney was born in Michigan.
Okay, Paul. Let's see if Paul knows the answer to this. Paul?
Yeah, I think the previous caller had the wrong Romney. It was George, the dad.
Hmm.
And the dad is the correct answer. George Romney was a... Well, George Romney, of course, in the 1960s was the governor of Michigan, but his father was a Mormon missionary, and they were, I think they were banned or expelled from the country in the 1800s, late 19th century. George Romney was born in Mexico. I remember when he ran for president in 1968, William Loeb, the publisher of the New Hampshire Union Leader, Manchester Union Leader, called him Chihuahua George.
Oh, gosh.
But, I mean, of course, the court has never ruled whether somebody like Romney or Lowell Weicker, who ran for president, was born in Paris, right, or even John McCain.
But were both his parents U.S. citizens?
They were citizens, exactly. Okay, they traveled overseas, yeah. Exactly, right. And of course, and Obama was born in Kenya, right? And nobody's talking about that. No, you know something? I once said that as a joke on your show. Yeah. And I got an angry email saying, how could you?
You're going to get another one.
You're going to get another one, I'm sure.
No. But that's the insanity of what's going on here. People will just say things, and because they saw it on the internets, you know, it must be true. And so George Romney was born in Mexico. Of course, Barack Obama was born in Hawaii, but the fact that people are convinced that he's not a citizen, he does not deserve to be president, shouldn't be president, that pervades the conversation all the way into 2016.
Hey, Paul, good job, and please stay on the line so we can get the address where to send your prize to. And again, congratulations for that. If you'd like to join our conversation with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson, the number to call, 513-419-7100. Howard, now, when Trump was at the American Legion Convention speaking this morning, how much of this did he bring up about his visit to Mexico and his immigration policies?
He didn't speak a lot about it. He talked about it in terms of, hey, we had a very good conversation. There's a basis we've laid here. That there are things, and he didn't specify which things, but there are things that our two countries can work together on. And that was just about all he had to say about that subject. And he moved on very quickly from that.
So what kind of, you're probably talking about things like guns, drugs.
Drug cartels. He did mention the drug cartels, you know, specifically that U.S. and Mexico could work together on trying to stop the flow of drugs into this country.
Yeah. One more thing about the Mexican trip by Trump, and I just can't get this out of my mind. I think at some point yesterday, I don't know if it was the Phoenix speech, or I think it was in the Phoenix speech, he said that I love Mexico. I love the Mexican people. And yet on the day he announced his candidacy, he talked about murderers and rapists and criminals. And basically, he's been running against Mexico for the longest time. Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, said it was a shame and a disgrace that Trump was even in Mexico. And I know there's a lot of criticism in Mexico of the president for inviting him to begin with. But to see Donald Trump say, you know, I love the Mexican people. Well, I mean, we know he loves the blacks, but he also loves the Mexican people and he loves Mexico. And if you compare that to everything he's been saying about Mexico, how they cheat us, how they, you know, they are unfair labor practices and they send us the worst. It's just remarkable that he says it and people say, okay, well, you know, he said it. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. We will continue our conversation with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Thanks to our Alicia Powers for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking politics this afternoon with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, Howard, Hillary Clinton spoke to the American Legion Convention the day before Donald Trump did. And she was critical of Trump for being disrespectful toward the military. And I'm wondering if Trump had any response when he's speaking to all these veterans.
No, he actually didn't have any direct response. I mean, what Hillary was saying was what she's been saying all along, talking about, you know, the things that Trump has said during this campaign, where he says, "I know more about ISIS than the generals do. Believe me, I know more than they do, and that our military is a disaster." You know, which he has said repeatedly, and things like, you know, the talking about John McCain, the former prisoner of war in Vietnam, and saying that he liked people who don't get captured. And, you know, she said, "This is just disrespectful. And if you don't respect the military, how can you be expected to lead them as commander in chief?" He really didn't have any direct response to that. You know, he talked about how if he becomes president, he's going to take care of the problems that are obvious in the VA medical system. He's going to put that back together again. Not a lot of specifics on how, but, you know, it was very – he totally ignored her.
You know, expanding on what Howard just said, I mean, when I think back to that comment that Donald Trump made about John McCain, that, you know, he's not a hero because he was captured, I remember thinking at the time, okay, he crossed a line here that he's not going to recover from. Right. And I realized that was the first of 10,000 lines that he crossed that I thought he would never recover from. The Khan family, the disabled New York Times reporter, the comments about women, about Muslims. I mean, I keep thinking that, okay, this time he's gone too far, and yet here we are, 68 days to go before the election, and not that polls are everything, and certainly not national polls are everything, because it's really a 50 state election. But as you alluded to earlier, the Fox News poll had it within 2 points in a 4-way race. And again, you know, I mean, does that mean it's that close? Who knows? But the fact is, he says these incendiary things over and over again, and he's clearly touching a chord because he's still in this race.
Well, and Howard, what was the comment he made? Where he knows he can get away with it. I mean, that one comment about I could step out on the street and shoot somebody, and it wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah, and he wouldn't lose a vote. Yeah,
the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York,
in New York City, and he would shoot somebody. And he wouldn't lose a vote. And that's another example of what Ken was talking about. He can say these things, and you hear that, and you say, wow, I've never heard a presidential candidate say something like that. That's just going to destroy him. Well, no, it doesn't destroy him. It just made him stronger and stronger and stronger during the primary system. Now, you know, when you compile all these things together into a 30-second commercial, it can look very bad. You know, which is what the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democrats are doing with those kind of statements.
And we definitely know that is a different electorate, those who voted in the Republican primaries and caucuses, than the kind of electorate you're going to see in the general election.
Absolutely. Yeah.
513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk to Todd in Clifton. Hi, Todd.
Hi. There's a photo of the Trumps and the Clintons at a wedding, at Donald Trump's wedding a few years ago, and they have their arms around each other and they're smiling. I just think of them as being part of the same multimillionaire class, and I just wonder whether your guests feel like this is just a scam, that maybe Donald Trump wants Clinton to win because they do have the same agenda. They talk about TPP, opposed to TPP, but really they're going to be probably favoring corporate America in the long run.
I have heard that over and do I think that Donald Trump wants Hillary Clinton to win? I mean, that is the ultimate conspiracy theory, that he's in this to rig it for her. He talks about a rigged election. Maybe it's rigged for her.
Well,
I don't believe that for
isn't that a lot of fueled by, I mean, there was a discussion between Bill Clinton and Donald Trump that occurred before he threw his hat in the ring. And I think that's what's fueling people say, well, what did they talk about?
But Todd's point is a good one. I mean, that picture amplifies exactly what people don't like about politics and the ruling class and the coziness between supposed ideological differences and opposites. Right.
They all run in the same circles. Yeah,
they do. And you heard that a lot from Bernie Sanders supporters, that it's part, they're part of the same class, it's part of the same party, and that you need a Bernie Sanders, or in some cases a Jill Stein, to break from that corporate mentality.
We had a call from Mary. Unfortunately, she didn't stay with us, but she told us that she was planning to write in one of the vice presidents on her ballot, but both of whom she feels are more qualified. Is that something that people can legally do? Can you just write in a candidate, or does that candidate have to actually...
There's different rules on that in different states. I mean,
correct.
Yeah, in Ohio, you have to register as a write-in candidate in order for your votes to be counted.
But you know something? If I could write in a candidate, yeah, I would write in Alicia Powers, because she listens to WVXU,
yeah,
and so far, as far as I know, she's the only one who listens. I can't believe that every week there's only one person who listens. This is a great show, and yet Alicia Powers is the only one listening? I don't understand this.
Well, it's her turn.
You know, there was an interesting poll, too, the idea of I'm frustrated, I want to write in somebody other than the two candidates who are running. There was an interesting poll from the Washington Post and ABC News that came out yesterday. 60% of registered voters have an unfavorable view of Trump, and 37% have a favorable view. But things aren't much better for Hillary Clinton, because 59% view Clinton unfavorably, and 39% view her favorably. So both of the major party candidates, they have very similar unfavorable numbers, and it sounds like
they are the
both
most
of them have a lot to overcome.
Presidential candidates in decades, many decades.
Yeah, I mean the num. You know, I posted that on Facebook, I think earlier today, and somebody wrote to me correctly that if you look at the 35-63 numbers for Trump and 41-56 for Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm, I mean it's only 15-point difference. I mean, not to say that I'm not diminishing her negatives, but it's only a 15-point spread for Hillary Clinton, and it's a 28% difference, 35-63 for Trump.
That's right.
So it's much worse for Trump. But right, the point is, and it frustrates, I mean, look, if we talk about qualifications, I think there's no comparison. If we talk about the hate language that you see in the campaign and the hate coming from supporters, there is no comparison. But having said that, these are two candidates with high disapproval numbers because there's stuff in their past and their present that just gives voters a reason to pause.
In a normal election, which this most certainly is not, the numbers that Hillary Clinton has right now would pretty much stick a fork in her. You know, she couldn't win. But, you know, as Ken pointed out, Donald Trump's numbers are even worse. And it's just, and we've never seen anything like this in recent history, where you have two people who are basically the two most unpopular politicians in the country running against each other for president.
But as I've been warned over and over again, of course, by Hillary Clinton supporters, that to compare the two of them is a mistake. If you look at qualifications, if you look at temperament, if you look at the detailed position papers,
They're disliked for different reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and Donald Trump supporters will say, "Well, look at the look at her record. I mean, she has these controversies surrounding her over her emails, over the Clinton Foundation. So, you know, they would point out that side of thing." And I think, Howard, as you put it, they're unpopular for very different reasons.
And I'm sure, you know, Ken, this is what Hillary's supporters are telling you, is that in her case, more people say that she is more competent to do this job than Donald Trump, and that's the best thing that she's got going for her in terms of numbers.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Andrew sent us an email with this question. He says, are we witnessing the culmination of the far-right momentum? And what about the future of the Republican Party, the Freedom Caucus, the Tea Party, and et cetera? You have to look at this election. You're talking about how it's like nothing you've seen in your lifetime. How much is this altering the GOP? And for that matter, I would imagine the Democratic Party is going through some shifting, too, because of this.
Well, I think less about the Democratic Party, because even if the Democratic – I mean, I would make the argument that the Democratic Party has moved a bit to the left, but I think Hillary Clinton has gone along with that. I mean, yeah. She has a lot of views on gay marriage, on the war, on trade, on the pipeline bill that she may not have had a couple of years ago, but she has now. So I think she's moving in step with the Democratic Party. The Republican Party, on the other hand, you still have major Republican holdouts, not only the Mark Kirks and the Susan Collins and the Jeff Flakes in the Senate, but, you know, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Jeb Bush, Mitt Romney.
John Kasich,
exactly, who would just say – Ted Cruz, who say no way. So I think – but here's the thing, though. In 1964, we remember when Barry Goldwater had that so-called right-wing takeover of the GOP. Mm-hmm. Back then, the Republican Party was kind of Eastern establishment, moderate, with Rockefeller, Scranton, those kind of guys, and even Romney. But the Republican Party got clobbered in 64. Goldwater only won six states. But then 2 years later, it picked up 43 seats in the House. And 2 years after that, Nixon was elected. So All the stories about the obituary of the Republican Party after 64 proved to be inaccurate and premature. And maybe that's the same thing this time. The difference here, though, is that win or lose, and I still suspect that Donald Trump loses, he's not going away anytime soon. And I suspect that he'd be very happy just to hang around and torture and make life miserable for President Hillary Clinton, whereas Barry Goldwater basically said, look, I gave it my best shot, and right. I'll fade from view.
But Ken, do you think win or lose, you think the GOP is going to change after this election cycle?
I do, and I think I don't know which way it changes. It's clearly dissatisfaction. I mean, look at think of what's going on in Congress. When they got rid of John Boehner, it wasn't the Democrats who rose up and got rid of John Boehner. It was unhappy conservatives. It was unhappy conservatives who got rid of Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and all the others because they liked what Donald Trump had to say. So there is clearly, I mean, we always talk about why doesn't Paul Ryan just denounce Donald Trump? Well, if he does, then he can say goodbye to all the Trump voters in November and forget about Republican control. Yep. There is a huge chasm in the Republican Party, and it's between the establishment and the new Trump voters. And honest to goodness, I have no idea which way it's going to turn out.
If Trump goes down hard, and I mean he really goes down hard this time around, and I don't know what's going to happen, but if he does,
you're just saying if
he does, I think there's a real question about who's going to pick up the pieces. Is it going to be the establishment types? The ones who have been in charge, or is it going to be the Trump wing of the party? Possibly with somebody else, a non-politician type who doesn't carry some of the baggage that Donald Trump has, who emerges and becomes a leader in the Republican Party. I just don't know which way it's going to go at this point.
But if he can convince enough of his supporters that this is a rigged election, that it's going to be stolen from him, then he doesn't go away. Then he feels that in the end he didn't lose. He didn't lose, and there's no reason for him to go away. But there are a lot of stories about compromised voting systems in Arizona and Illinois and perhaps other states, maybe Pennsylvania as well, with the electronic voting. Yeah. You don't know what the Russians have in store, what they want, what they plan to do. This is a very uneasy time, not only for the election, but I think for democracy itself. I know that sounds like hyperbole, but I really think it's true because there's so many people who are just losing faith in this whole system. Yeah. Right. And if that's the case, my goodness,
then we're in trouble.
We are in trouble, right.
A question from Jerry in North Avondale. The candidates have high negatives, but the new normal is beating up on candidates and attack ads. So you think he has a point?
Well, attack ads are not new. I mean, we've seen attack. I mean, I remember, not that I remember, but I've read it. I remember I've seen ads in 1948 that Truman supporters were calling Dewey a fascist. I mean, the thought of Thomas Dewey as a fascist is a little over the top. But I mean, And you know, I mean, we have a history of negative campaigns and dirty campaigns in this country. This just seems, maybe it's talk radio, maybe it's cable news, but it just seems nastier
and social
than ever.
Media too.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Let's talk with Dick in Hyde Park. Hi, Dick.
Hi, appreciate you taking my call. I am a political junkie, and I love your show, but I do have a question. Aren't you folks tired of basically saying the same thing over and over and over again for months?
Are we tired of talking about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton?
Well, but not only that, there's really nothing new here to say. Everything, I mean, from my perspective, everything is baked in. I listen to this, I listen to all the progressive stuff, Diane Rehm show, and I come away saying, what have I learned new from listening? And it seems like you have to, it's not a criticism, just, you know, maybe get your understanding of why it's necessary to keep giving attention to things that have already been said. And then the second part of this is, given at least my belief that everything is already baked in, nobody's opinion is going to change, the election is determined by the ground game in places like Ohio. And, you know, if you have something to say about that, I'd love to hear it.
You're absolutely right. The ground game, particularly in states like Ohio, is extremely important. And frankly, that's one of the great advantages that Hillary Clinton has in this state and in some other big battleground states. You know, because she has the people and the staff and the volunteers. And in Ohio, Donald Trump has a very good operative by the name of Bob Poduchik running his state campaign. He ran the campaigns of George W. Bush in 2000 and 2004 in Ohio. He got Rob Portman elected to the U.S. Senate, and he is very good, but he just needs more resources.
You know something, as Dick was talking, I listened very carefully to what he said, and I didn't feel chastened, but I think what he's saying is there's a lot of truth there. I mean,
no, he does make a very good point.
A very, very good point. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, of course, I wonder if the media, like, for example, we were desperately, and I think we, meaning the media at large, were desperately talking about a story that may have been fake all along, that, well, Donald Trump is going to have a new position on immigration. So we hyped it for days and days and days. And then we hear a speech yesterday, and the speech is as strong as ever. And then there is no softening of position. So I wonder if we are so tired and so repetitive about the pluses and minuses of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump that we look for things that may not even exist to make it more interesting. Now, of course, we do have the unpredictability of the debates coming up, and that will be something to watch. But again, you know something, I think Dick Reese makes a very good point. I mean, that's why I think there's a great story out there about the battle for the Senate, because a lot of people are not talking about that as much as they should.
Sure.
But, I mean, what new could we say about Donald Trump's past statements or Hillary Clinton's controversies or strengths or even? I mean, it's a very good thing that it's worth pondering.
Yeah, he makes a very good point. And, you and I, Ken, we both went through the conventions this year. I mean, this was my 15th and 16th that I've covered. And you know, at the end of them, you just think, well, this whole thing was ridiculous. I mean, there was no news, not any real news. We knew what was going to happen going in, and it's, you know, there are these four-day campaign commercials. Yeah, there are 15,000 media people there covering a thing.
See, Howard, you know I love you to death, and I'm not sure I agree with you on this, because I think if you go to the Republican convention, you think of one, I mean, sometimes there were fake controversies like the Melania Trump plagiarism, but the Ted Cruz in prime time not endorsing Trump. Michelle Obama being booed by Bernie Sanders supporters because she says nice things about Hillary Clinton. That's an interesting story. So I think the conventions were more interesting, and the Debbie Wasserman Schultz story, for God's sake, about the leaks and the hacks. So there were stories that came out of the convention. I would say that in 2016, this is probably one of the more interesting set of conventions in a long time.
You're right about that, Ken. All those things, were interesting. But then they have kind of a short shelf life, too.
Yeah, well.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and my guest this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk to John in Oxford. Hi, John.
Hi, good afternoon. So I'm wondering, given the extraordinarily high unfavorable ratings of both Clinton and Trump, what's it going to take to get Johnson and Weld in the mix?
Well, what's going to take is better poll numbers. Right now, I mean, we always see better numbers in the beginning of September than we do in the beginning of November for third-party candidates. They always go down as we get closer and closer to the election. Having said that, the Libertarian Party has never gotten more than 1% of the vote in its history. Right now, Gary Johnson, the former governor of New Mexico, and his running mate, former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld on the Libertarian Party ticket, have usually like 9-10%, which is great for them. But unless they get 15% on an average of the polls, they'll never get involved in the debates. And if they're not going to be involved in the debates, the voters won't know about them, and they'll probably wind up with 1% of the vote again. Although, as John points out, with all these negatives, with Clinton and Trump negatives, you have the potential for a stronger third party showing this year than ever, but not if they're not going to be in the debates.
And Howard, isn't Jill Stein going to be in Cincinnati soon?
Jill Stein is going to be in Cincinnati on Sunday. And Jill Stein is interesting, too, because I've seen some things that would suggest that maybe Jill Stein's presence on the ballot in most of these states might be hurting Johnson a little bit, and keeping his numbers down. Because if he doesn't get on, to the 15% threshold to make it to the debates, then he's just done.
But whatever you think of the Fox poll that came out the other day with Hillary Clinton up by 2 points, without Johnson and Stein in the running, Hillary Clinton's lead, I think, moves up to 8 points or six, something like that. So I wonder if both Johnson and Stein are taking away from Hillary Clinton, which seems to be counterintuitive, but it's possible.
513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jenny in Northern Kentucky joins us now. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, good afternoon. My comment is just that I feel like the two major candidates are not unlike one another in that they're probably both billionaires and probably both corrupt. I don't know if you dug deep enough on Donald. I'm sure there's something there, but their money seems probably similar in the silver spoon effect, but the difference being that Hillary Clinton seems to have background with foreign policy and other country, leaders and leadership material, as well as she's smart. Maybe she wasn't born with the silver spoon in her mouth that Donald was, but I don't understand how people can look at Donald Trump and think that he's a regular person's kind of guy with his background. And I just think they're not that dissimilar, but she's the better choice when it comes to background and having some sensibility about actually leading a government. So that's my take on it.
Jenny, thank you for the call.
I mean, if you look at her resume, Hillary Clinton, 8 years as first lady, 8 years as senator from New York, secretary of state for 4 years. I mean, that's a resume that is a little more superior than appearing on The Apprentice or being sued a million times. So I think
But the record can work both ways, though.
Well, but it was interesting when she was talking yesterday. I mean, she was talking specifically here at the American Legion thing about that experience, about being in the Situation Room when the Navy SEALs were going after Bin Laden. She can talk about she knows all these leaders, and she was talking about a president has to build coalitions in order to do things like defeat ISIS and take care of international terrorism. They can't do it alone. And that Donald Trump doesn't seem to be the type of person who is going to build those kind of alliances.
Let's speak with Tom, who is visiting from Michigan. Hi, Tom. Oh, we lost Tom. My apologies there. Let's speak to Taylor in Delhi. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to make the comment and just provoke the conversation towards the idea that everything these days just has to be spoken about with the most superlative that we have. I think that the reason we like Paul Ryan the most in the House speaking for the Republicans is that he's able to speak the language of both sides of why does Donald Trump have to make everything an absolute huge issue, and why does Hillary Clinton have to say things the way she does? This election is what it is. I just wonder how can we productively move towards compromise and demand that politicians moving forward be able to speak eloquently about issues that affect us all and do so in a way that's productive.
Boy, that's a sad question because I don't see there's an answer. I mean, we've seen in recent years that whenever a Democrat or Republican starts to talk about compromise, then they're hit by a primary from the far left or the far right because they're selling out their principle. It's a rhino Republican or a sellout Democrat. So in the old days, there would be members of Congress who would fight all day on the floor of the House and then afterwards share a drink together. But now nobody socializes with anybody else. Nobody talks to anybody. They go home to their families. They work 3 days a week, and then they appear on Fox or MSNBC, and nothing gets done. Look, I mean, do I think both parties are equally responsible? I don't. The thought of not having hearings for U.S. Supreme Court justices is beyond the pale. But, I mean, but both sides play the game, and if they fall victim to, God forbid, they decide to have some kind of a compromise, they get lambasted by the extremists in their own party. So it's not an encouraging future.
I've never seen politics so polarized as it is now, and that's why you don't get that kind of rational, reasonable rhetoric out of politicians and the ability to sit down and actually work things out.
Again, 513-419-7100. Let's talk with Joe in Over the Rhine. Hi, Joe.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. Your discussion or your talking about third-party candidates, that's my frustration. It seems like third-party candidates only appear every 3.5 years. You know, about 6 months before the election, you hear about, he's a Libertarian or a Green Party candidate. So what do you think they could do to maintain a more frequent presence? And my only comment would be recently back from a vacation in Colorado where you got to see commercials for both Johnson and
Jill Stein,
her title, the Green Party style.
Jill Stein,
Jill Stein. And I, I'm sorry with the previous caller was talking about superlative. Her ad on TV, I hope I don't misquote it, but it literally said, her voice, "I will end systemic racism." And I'm thinking, wow, she's the second coming. If she can do that personally, I'm really impressed. So, just a turnoff on that. But your thoughts about third party and what they need to do to make a bigger presence?
Well, Joe, one of the problems is, states have different rules about ballot access. Ohio, right now, you have the Green Party has ballot access. Jill Stein can run for president with Green Party next to her name. Libertarians do not have it at this point, and you know Johnson is going to run for president, but not with the Libertarian tag, you know, by his name. And it changes from election cycle to election cycle whether or not these third parties can get ballot access. You know, the Constitution Party used to have ballot access in Ohio. But then there's a certain threshold that they have to meet in order to continue it. And, you know, if they can't do that, they're off.
Aside from the Libertarians and the Green Parties, I mean, there was something called the No Label, a group called No Labels, where they're trying to get a third approach, not a Democratic and not a Republican approach. But, you know, it's basically a bunch of no-name former politicians who don't carry much weight. I mean, if a Michael Bloomberg or a Colin Powell or somebody like that decide to stand up and say that, you know, that the two parties are corrupt or wrong and we need a third way, that might be more interesting.
Right.
Of course, Ross Perot did very well in 1992 because he spent $60 million and he got 19 million votes and he was in the debates. But for the most part, these guys are not in the debates. They're not. People don't know who they are. And there's no sustaining. It's one thing to say, I'm going to run for president in a presidential year on the Libertarian or the Socialist Workers or the Green Party. But to have a sustaining third party, you need money and you need big names willing to do that. And for the most part, we're not getting that. And that's why you only hear these candidates every 4 years.
Now, we've got the first debate coming up in just a few weeks. And Howard, where's this one taking place?
Well, the first one's at Hofstra University. It's on September 26th. It was going to be at Wright State University just up the road from us, but they pulled out, saying that they basically didn't have the money to be able to pull this off. So now it's been switched over to Hofstra.
And then how many debates after?
Well, you've got the vice presidential debate on Tuesday, October 4th. That's at in Farmville, Virginia, Longwood University. And then Sunday, October 9th. You've got Washington University in St. Louis, and University of Nevada at Las Vegas, right?
Right, that's correct.
Yeah, so three of those are in battleground states.
Right. So basically, since 1976 with Ford and Carter, you have three presidential debates and one vice presidential debate. But of course, in 1980, Jimmy Carter said, I'm not debating, I'm only having one debate. And that was a huge mistake for him because after Reagan cleaned his clock at the end of October, Jimmy Carter never had a chance to respond. But for the most part, it's three presidential, one vice presidential.
And so there's been talk about Gary Johnson trying to get on the stage with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So what's he have to do, Howard, and how realistic is it that he might make it?
Well, according to the commission, for presidential debates, he has to meet
a threshold. Which is made up of Democrats and Republicans.
Democrats, that's exactly right. Democrats and Republicans make up this commission. And he has to reach a threshold in five major polls. Of 15%. And he is not near that at this point.
Yeah, that sounds like that'd be pretty tough to do.
Maybe 9%, maybe 10%. I've seen 7%. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell exactly where he is at this point, but he's going to have to pick it up pretty quickly, I think, to be able to make it for the September 26th debate.
Less than 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
Ken, what are your expectations for this first debate?
Well, something, it's interesting the way watching the two of them prepare. Hillary Clinton is meeting with foreign policy experts, domestic policy experts. She has debate partners. They're trying to try all these things out. My understanding is that Trump is really almost winging it. He's talking to Rudy Giuliani. He's talking to Roger Ailes. He's talking to, I don't know if he's talking to Ann Coulter, but I mean, he's talking to the conservatives who are backing him. And I think they're trying out one-liners or something outrageous to say. It's clearly a different approach for the two candidates. And boy, I'll tell you, it's one of those things that I guarantee we're not going to take our eyes off throughout that whole debate.
Yeah. Well, Ken and Howard, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. On Cincinnati Edition on Tuesday, we'll be taking a look at voting trends, so be sure to join us for that at 1 o'clock. And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll review and discuss the people, stories, and events that affected the tri-state this week. We'll present an in-depth look at the developments behind the headlines with editors and reporters from WVXU and other local news organizations. And we'd like to hear and share your thoughts on this week's news and how it was reported. Join us on the next Cincinnati Edition for our weekly news review, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.